All right, everybody, let's have a meeting at 7 o'clock.
Hi, Amy.
Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Amy and I am an alcoholic.
Hello, Amy.
Hi, Amy.
For those of you who wish to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 10. Please welcome our panel, Debbie and Jake. I will read the first paragraph on page 84, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Page 84. This thought, step 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Page 84. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commenced this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code.
All right, nominated for first. So we'll put the pressure on Jake to cover the minutes. So I'm an alcoholic. My name is Debbie.
Hey, Debbie.
And, step 10 is only a couple of paragraphs, and so that means a lot of talking, and I just don't like doing a lot of talking anymore about that. I really like living it, but I will be the first to admit that this is my least used step for many, many years. My sobriety date is October 24th, 1982, and my home group is right here at Simple Actions. Yay! And so this step 10, you know, first of all, it says when we were wrong. Well, when I was drinking, I don't know about you, but I was never wrong when I was drinking. You were always wrong when I was drinking. And for quite a while into sobriety, I would say. I would rather do anything than admit I'm wrong when I'm first coming into these rooms. And so it took a long time for me to be able to do that. And part of the way I was able to learn how to do that is the steps prior to this, because I am very, very lucky that I, when I came into AA, I'm not a first nighter, and when I came in, it was at the suggestion of a judge, and after the fear wore off of going to jail, I started drinking again, because when I came to AA, I sponsored myself, I bought the book, I'm very intelligent in my world. Today I feel not so much, but at that time I thought I was very intelligent and I should be able to handle this like I handle all the other things that go on in my life. And so when I, you know, alcohol is a great persuader, and when I finally came around to these rooms and was willing to do what was suggested, and I got a sponsor and we started doing these steps, it kind of taught me how to take inventory. I had no idea what that was about. When they talked about resentments earlier on, it's like, I know rage, I know happiness, I don't know what the subtle thing of resentment is. And so I had to learn all of that, but way before I could start doing this on any kind of regular basis. And so then it talks about admitting we were wrong and promptly admitting it. So that took even longer, the promptness. So once I realized I can make a mistake and that I can say I was wrong, usually, you know, for the longest time I concentrated so much about when I was wrong and my emotions would just flare that it was way too deep into it already, if that makes any sense. I didn't catch anything and nip it in the bud early on when I could feel myself escalating. And so I wasn't about to admit anything once I did realize that I made a mistake. And I would usually have to take it home and mull it over. And I would eventually talk it over with my sponsor and even eventually make an amends if it was necessary, as it talks about here. And the thing that I still have the hardest time doing is then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. And when I do remember to do that, it's the best thing. It's the answer. You know, I had to get the other part done to get the mess out of my way and the mess out of my head of me, and I'm right and you're wrong or whatever, to be able to see any kind of grace in the picture that it really is not about right and wrong, Debbie. It's just about your behavior. And so I really do like step 10, and I love step 11. I try and use step 10 on a regular basis now, and I do believe it's a way of living and not just reading these couple of paragraphs. You know, I had a phone call early this morning from someone, and they were ramped up. And I understand ramped up. And, you know, just spewing, and I listen for a while, and what I know is, you know, the 12 and 12 tells me that when I am disturbed, there's something wrong with me. You may be totally in the wrong, but if I'm disturbed by what you're doing, there's something wrong with me, and that's eventually what we got to in the phone conversation. It's like, it's okay, you talk about it, you do what you got to do to get it all out of your system, to get out of a level 15 down to something that you can work with, because what I have to be concerned about is my spiritual fitness, which we'll talk about later. But I really do believe that I'm trying to grow in understanding and effectiveness, and it does take my lifetime. I've been sober a long time, and I still learn from these steps. I've been saying that a lot lately to sponsees. Are you doing 10 and 11? Are you doing 10 and 11? And I say that because I didn't do 10 and 11 for so long. And I know that when I do it, that seems to be where the answer is. Thanks.
Thanks, Debbie. My name is Jake. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jake.
Amy, thanks for asking me to come out and speak, and congratulations on your anniversary, Debbie.
Oh, sure.
My sobriety date is September 28, 1993, and my home group is Friday night, sober at 7, Kings Grant Presbyterian Church. We're on Kings Grant Road in Virginia Beach. I really love Step 10. I'm very fond of saying that the two biggest tools I've gotten in AA, the two most effective tools are inventory and prayer. And I'm definitely a big fan of the line here. It says, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. I always equate that back to the four, well, it's one sentence, but I break it out into four questions in the four step. Where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened when writing about my resentments? And so that's kind of when, you know, like what Debbie ended on, when I get disturbed or something's churning or something's just kind of pecking away at me, those are the four kind of ideas I go for. Like, where am I being selfish here? Where am I being dishonest about this situation? Do I have any resentments? Am I re-feeling the experience? Am I replaying it over my head and trying to change it or recreate it in a different way, you know? And what am I afraid of? And I also, you know, I've been sober a while too, and my experience is I can remember my experience early in early sobriety, thinking about these things, and how that what I thought and experienced then is still valid, but how much it's grown and expanded over the years. And that the idea has come to me that, wow, they wrote this in such a way that they'd already had the experience of getting sober, so they knew that, like, you just didn't write a four-step and then all that stuff's gone. Like, I'm an alcoholic. I'm still going to act alcoholically, even in sobriety, with my behaviors, particularly as it concerns my selfishness. And for me, one of my big things is anger, which I know is just a lot of resentment and fear kind of, you know, all twisted together. But I use, you know, I talk about this when I sponsor guys. You know, I tell them, I'm sponsoring one guy now, and he's so eager. Like, I definitely believe, do not get in the way of the willing. But he wants to go right into 10, 11, and 12. He's like, how am I ever going to help anybody? I want to learn how to pray and meditate and take inventory. And, you know, we're talking about steps 1, 2, and 3, this guy and I. And I use this line here, you know, it's not an overnight matter. It should be continued for our lifetime. And there's no way I can transmit my 26 years of experience in sobriety into this guy who's got like 95 days sober. He's going to have his own experience with it as long as he continues to stay sober and grow. And then the other thing, going back to the idea of like an early sobriety, the love and tolerance of others is our code. That was something that was tossed around in the groups I got sober in and with the people I got sober with. And just always thinking about, well, that's basically like an idea, like a mantra, like a way I'm going to live my life. I'm going to love and tolerate others. Because, you know, earlier in this book, it talks about, you know, relationships with others. That's one of the roots of our problems. And so if I can bring the idea of loving somebody wherever they're at and tolerating somebody wherever they're at, whatever the situation is, not only is that going to help my own peace of mind and my own serenity, which is going to help support, you know, the spiritual condition that Debbie talked about, but it's also going to make me, it's going to put me in the position to be helpful to the most amount of people at any given moment. And I'm not a saint at doing that by any means, and that's the other thing I really, for me, I always take away with the idea that, you know, this continues over a lifetime, is that I don't get, you know, what it says, rendered white as snow, progress, not perfection. So And I think that step 10 is, it's to me, it's just been vitally important to my spiritual growth, because it keeps me looking at myself, looking in the mirror, addressing my own behavior, my own motives, my own thoughts and desires, you know, about my own life. And it's so funny. Today I was talking with a friend, and we were kind of in this, like, lamenting and being sad about some, you know, for her talking about some past relationships, for me talking about some past relationships, and she said something like, I feel like I'm sad all the time. And I said, yeah, I know that. I know that feeling. I feel some sadness. But then I said, well, enough of that. Time to get on with the day. I'm going to pray for you and pray for the people that I'm sad about. And then I said this, exactly what it says here. I'm going to turn my thoughts to those that I can help. And she came back with some kind of glib, sarcastic answer. And I just wrote, AA equals an endless supply of people to help. And that's been another part of my experience is, you know, I get to come to AA and be sober, but I also, this is like where I can come and find the most amount of people that I can help with my experience being an alcoholic and having gotten sober. So, thanks.
Thanks.
Continuing on page 84. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition.
All right, I'll try and stay on topic here a little bit. I like to give examples of what's going on in my life, of how these steps work, and I like people that do that, because that's why I come here, is to see how does this work in your life. And so I guess it was about 2 weeks ago, I had a plumber come into the house for a specific reason, and then had a question about another thing. And so my husband's retired and I work at home sometimes, so I'm upstairs working at home when the plumber comes, and we knew he was coming. And I hear my husband telling the plumber what he can do, what my husband can do to fix the problem. And my first thought is always wrong, even today, because my first thought was, what the are you doing? Because we're paying him $150 to walk in the door. And now I'm upstairs and I'm like, okay, do I go downstairs? Do I go downstairs? Do I go downstairs? Do I go downstairs? And so I do this. I ask God to remove this craziness in my head that I just want to put my husband in his place. You know, and I didn't discuss it with someone immediately then, but I have since talked to someone, more than one person, about it. I didn't harm anyone, and I did turn my thoughts to someone else. So this is how it went down. So I'm upstairs, and I got all this craziness going on, and I do go downstairs, and I don't do my normal Debbie routine of, you know, I can silence a room without saying a word, and I don't give that look to my husband, and I just let him talk to the plumber, and then I say what the question was that I needed. And he answers the question, and I go back upstairs. Now, I gotta tell you, you don't know me, that's the grace of God working in my life, because that is not how Debbie responds to her crazy head saying, shut up and let the man do his work, because that's what I wanna say. And so what I was able to say after the plumber did his work and left was I was able to, after I was off work, went downstairs, I gave my husband a hug, and I said, thank you for dealing with the plumber today. And I'm like, who the hell is this person? Because that's not what I do. And the only explanation I have for that is these steps and just practicing it over and over and over again. And it is progress and not perfection. And that whole thing of love and tolerance of others is our code. I wish I could say I'm loving and tolerant. I'm trying to figure out at 65 years old what love even is, because I am a selfish and self-centered person. I'm learning those lessons a lot through these rooms and the people that I have met through these rooms. But what I love, the 10th step promises. I'm not sure why we read the 9th step promises. Yeah, they're good, but I get more relief out of the 10th step promises than I do out of the 9th step promises. That's just me. And that's what this paragraph is that we just read. And my favorite line that brought me the most relief is, and we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. I am a fighter. I just recently got a new sponsor. And I was telling her, I'm a fighter, or I used to be a fighter, and I, you know, everything I let go of has claw marks, bite marks, blood and snot on it, because I don't want to let go of anything. And we're talking about whatever we were talking about. And she goes, so do you like hit people? Do I need to stand away from you? What kind of fighter are you? It's like, no, I just like to verbally fight and win. I want to win. I want to be right. And what I have found out of these promises is, it's not when I'm right that I'm happy. It is actually when one thing I want to say about this inventory that I started on and the first time was, I always concentrated on what was wrong with my day, what I did wrong. And now today, my prayer has kind of changed. This is step 10. Step 11 is the end of the day review. And so when I do my end of the day review, what brings me joy is what I have done when I thought about others. Like when I do it tonight, that phone conversation this morning brings me joy. Not when I'm right and I, you know, put somebody in their place or feel arrogant or superior or whatever. That does not bring me joy anymore. It used to bring me joy. I wanted to win at all costs. And so these promises are true for me. I had a really cool experience over the weekend. So I have a trainer at One Life for a short period of time because I was going on a hiking trip. And so there was this thing down at the pavilion that plant-based nutrition, I won't get way off topic here, but anyway, she wanted to go and so we went. And she's younger than me, she's from Bosnia. And she asked me if I watched the show Shameless when we were driving down there. And I said, this is going to be way too much information about me than you need to know. But no, I don't, because I'm a recovered alcoholic. I've been sober for a while. And I go to AA, and I got plenty of drunks and drug addicts around me. I do not need to watch it on my TV in the living room. And she's like, oh. And she starts talking to me about her mother, who is in Bosnia and is an alcoholic and has lost her marriage and her home and all of these things. And so I'm trying to find out if we can get a Bosnia big book. And that brings me joy, is what the reason I'm telling that story. It's when I turn my thoughts to others and get out of myself is when the joy comes. And that was an example I also used this morning in the phone conversation, because I want the answer before I even go into the problem. I want to know what's God's will, what's happening, I want to be suited up, and I don't have that answer until those words come out of my mouth. I don't even know what's going to happen until I'm in the situation. And that has been my experience, that when I bring God into the picture on a daily basis, I get the answers I need when I need them. I don't know it going into the situation. I just, because I do listen for that inspiration and I do listen for that quiet voice inside, that then I know what I'm supposed to do. I don't think about drinking, because she said, you still go to meetings? And I said, yeah, I do. I said, I don't want to drink. It's not that I want to drink. It's that that's where I get to help others. And congratulations on your anniversary. And so the whole thing, you know, thing about it just comes without any thought or effort on our part. You know, that's the miracle of it. And I love this position of neutrality, safe and protected, because that is how I feel most times. Now, I'm not going to tell you it's 100%. I still have my 2 o'clock anxiety attacks every now and then when I think about I can't take care of this house, blah, 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 all the whatever crazy you got going on at 2 o'clock. That's when mine hits. But I know that sometimes when I can just say these prayers that are in this book, that I can get some peace and that I can get some sleep. The other thing I always like sharing at this is, it's been a couple of years ago now, but it just shows you the power of this program. I nearly got fired at work because of the way I treated and talked to other people, and I had been there 20 plus years at the time. And I remember the director saying, "So you are aware of how you talk to people?" And I said, "Yes, I am." And that was a very furious weekend of steps 4 through 9 and getting right-sized and being able to go back to that director and say that I was wrong and that I want to be part of the solution and not the problem. And anyway, so I didn't lose my job. And I tell you that because one day I was at work and I don't usually break my anonymity, and my anonymity is very important to me at work. The girl at work, there's one girl that I told because she looked like she might be able to use our help, and because of things she shared with me, and her liver was shot. Anyway, so I had told her that I was sober. So she said, "Debbie, I want to know," not the day that I told her I was sober, because that makes sense what I'm going to say next, but I'd worked with her for about 6 years. And she said, "Debbie, I want to know what drugs you're taking, because I want some of them." And I said, "I'm not taking any drugs. Why do you say that?" And she said, "Because you've changed. Because you don't bark at people anymore. You don't tell people what to do anymore. You don't come over here and take my mouse and say, 'This is how you do it. Don't ask me again,' you know, because that's who I was." And again, I don't know how that happens except for this step, because I can't bring it to the show. I can wake up and try and be good Debbie, and that lasts for about 10 minutes. And then it's back to who Debbie is. So the only way I know this works is if I'm being transformed by these steps. And I believe that I am. And so I have got these promises. I absolutely love these promises. And that again, this is how we react so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. And that's what I realized today and what I said on the phone this morning is that's my job today. My job is to stay in fit spiritual condition, because if I'm not, then I'm not going to hear that quiet voice in my head. I'm not going to know what to say and when to say it. And this program gives me the way to do that. Thanks.
Thanks. I'm not one for editing the big book. However, I usually like to put the last sentence of this paragraph first and then read it. And it doesn't change the whole context, but it reminds me that all the things in the beginning of the paragraph happen as long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. I was sitting here thinking about the first concert I ever went to sober. My sponsor took me to see the Rolling Stones at RFK Stadium, 1994 Voodoo Lounge Tour. It was an amazing experience, and I had about 10 months sober, and I was going to the concert with him and 3 other sober men, so there were 5 of us. And I remember thinking about a conversation I had with that sponsor at about 4 or 5 months sober. I just turned 18, which meant I was allowed to go places that played live music. And I was getting ready. I just left a meeting. I was getting ready to go into a bar to listen to music. And I knew that's why I was going into the bar to listen to music, but I had 5 months sober. I'd been out of rehab for 2 months. And I was going with other sober people from the meeting we'd just left. But he looks at me and he says, "Do you really think this is a good idea?" And I can remember it like I was watching myself do it before this meeting started. I arched my back and puffed myself up and said, "I got this." And he went, "Whoa," right there, not first step, not powerless over alcohol. And it just hit me like, yeah, you know, maybe this isn't a good idea. So I didn't go. I couldn't tell you if I was going to get drunk that night or not, but I didn't go. So, you know, a few months later, going to a concert, and one of the things that came out of that conversation was my sponsor just asked me, he said, you know, why don't you not go to places where there's alcohol and other things for a while? Maybe how about your first year, you know? He didn't lay any rules out. He just suggested it. Give yourself the gift of some time and sobriety. And that's a conversation I have with guys I sponsor now. And I always reference this paragraph specifically and that experience. So the at the concert was a totally different experience than standing outside that bar. We're walking into RFK Stadium. I'm saying the serenity prayer to myself. I'm asking God to keep me sober. I'm saying out loud, why am I coming to this place where there's booze and pot and everything else just flowing? And I'm here to see this band and enjoy the company and my sponsor and these other three friends, and just to go listen to live music at a concert. And we're there, and the beer man's walking up in the aisles, and all of a sudden, you know, I smell marijuana, and they all smell it, and we're all like, oh man, that's, you know, and he looks down the aisle at me, and he goes, are you okay? I said, yeah. And the band was playing, and I like to, like, I go to concerts now still, and I like to walk around and watch the crowd, and so I went way up in the stadium, and it was just impressive how even the farthest away you could get from the stage, you could still hear the music and have the experience. And I told him, I'm gonna go walk around, and he's like, are you okay? And I said, yeah. I prayed, I said the serenity prayer, I asked God to keep me sober, and he was like, that's the game, name of the game we're talking about here. And he gave me a high five, and he said, don't drink, come back sober. And I did, and I didn't even know that this paragraph was what was occurring in my life, because we hadn't gotten to actually this paragraph in my step work with him at that point. But when we did, we talked about that experience, and the thing that I just, that's really, really important to me in my sobriety is the for this time, sanity will have returned. And the way I define sanity and insanity is what it talks about in the doctor's opinion, where I have an inability to differentiate the true from the false. Without God changing my brain and allowing my brain to recognize that alcohol is bad for Jake, that's a God thing, that God has made that change possible, and I've taken actions with the steps to create the relationship with God to make that possible, that eventually, given enough time away from AA, away from the steps, away from practicing this stuff and taking the actions, and without a relationship from God, alcohol will eventually look good to me again. The fact is that it will always be bad for me, but in my head, I will become insane again, and it'll look good to me. So my spiritual condition, one of the ways I know I'm in fit spiritual condition is that when I think about alcohol, I do recoil from it, even mentally recoil from it. I just know. But I also don't walk around in fear of it. I don't walk around dreading the sight of it or the thought of it or going to the grocery store or going anywhere. And I do even 25 years ago, I do the same kind of checklist. Like, I pray, I ask God to keep me sober. What am I doing here? Like, what's my reason for going to this? And I've literally stopped myself or been stopped by God's grace that I'll recognize, you know, I'm not in a good place right now. Maybe I shouldn't go to this wedding or go to this event or go to this party or whatever it is. So yeah, I mean, I could go line by line through all this stuff, but that's just one of the experiences that I was ruminating around in my head. And it is one of the things that I, you know, I go, I like, we'll just go to this paragraph and say, I'm not telling, like, guys I sponsor is like, I'm not telling you not to do these things. I'm telling you what AA's experience is, what my experience with AA is, and how it mirrors this paragraph in this book that's written for alcoholics. Like, I don't try to talk down to them, but I'm basically, I'm like, you're 32 years old. This book's 80 years old. Like, I'm sorry, but whatever ideas you have are not going to outweigh what this book has to say. Say, let's apply your experience to this paragraph. Have you gotten in fit spiritual condition yet? Oh, I haven't. Okay, well, do you want to get in fit spiritual condition? Because there's things you can do. And if you do them and start practicing them, then you can go to the concert, you can go to the show, you can go to your brother's wedding and be sober and enjoy it. So, thanks.
We're turning over to page 85. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will.
All right, well, I saw the Rolling Stones in 1973, I think it was. But anyway, Mick was younger then.
I wasn't even alive.
Jake wasn't alive then. I digress. Okay. Okay. So, we all quote this, what we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. I've been guilty of it many, many times. What I didn't read for a very long time was the next line, which is, every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. It's like, oh, that seems like a lot. So, anyway, I do know that when I rest on my laurels, and I think I have it, and I think that I can play God again, that things don't go well for Debbie or for the people around me. I also know that that whole progress, not perfection thing, the way that these steps come true in my life now have changed, the actions have changed. I think these steps are all about action. And so it was kind of in stages. What happened to me is, like, the first thing I had to learn how to do, and it took years, was keep your mouth shut, Debbie. Unless somebody is asking for your opinion, you don't have to give it. And so I had to learn how to zip it. I would sometimes be sitting, especially at work, I would have to go like this and just zip it. And then sometimes if I've got a little too carried away, I would have to physically get up and leave the room. And the whole, you know, everybody talks about the serenity prayer. That thing is way too long for me when I am jacked up. And so I just say, what do you want me to do? 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 Because that's how my mind races. And I'll get out of the room and I'll say this prayer. And then sooner or later, my thoughts will get back to other people. But when I get in trouble, like I said, I was about ready to get fired, is, so I'm only guilty if I get caught, and so when I can talk to somebody at work like I was talking to them, the woman that called me on that was the first woman in my career that ever told me to my face what probably everyone else was thinking. And I have more respect for that woman than any of the other people I worked for. And it's interesting because she retired, I guess it was springtime of this year. So she was vice president of the company by this time, and she still knows me by name. And I went to her retirement thing and took a card, and I told her that she changed my life because she forced me into this book. She forced me into these steps. Now, she doesn't know she did that. but this is the only solution I've got to the problems that are in my life. And so I did. I told her that she changed my life, because I don't know how long I would have kept talking like that to my coworkers until somebody called me on it. And we were both in tears. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. He was talking about, first of all, I was a bartender when I got sober. I attended a bar for 5 years when I got sober, so we each have our own. My motive was I need to pay my rent, and so we each have our own story. But a few years ago, we had gone up to Yorktown. A couple of carloads of us went up to Yorktown to the Saturday night speaker meeting, and we stopped at County Grill on the way back, and they had a band there on Saturday night. And there was like a 20-year-old girl with me, a 40-year-old girl with me, and I was 60 at the time. It's like, you can't make this stuff up. You cannot. If I had woke up that morning and God had sat on the couch and said, this is what's going to happen today, Debbie, and I just don't even understand how this stuff happens, but it's just because I make myself available, and I do say a lot now, thy will be done, because it's short, it's easy, it's to the point, it gets me out of being God, and miraculous things and amazing things and fun things happen in my life because of it. And when I don't have that day, and I can't carry yesterday's stuff, either way, the bad stuff or the good stuff. I can't carry yesterday's sobriety or yesterday's serenity or yesterday's spiritual fitness into today. And I joke sometimes that, you know, my mother was a very, I wouldn't even call her religious. She just knew there was a God and that she was going to heaven and whatever. She was a nice person. She'd say, have a nice day. And I'd like, you know, let's go, Mom. We got to, you know, anyway. And so she was just a nice person. Didn't have to work at it. It takes me a good 45 minutes in the morning to be able to look at the other people, because I have to pray and I have to meditate and I have to have my coffee, and there's things that I have to do on a daily basis. I got books that I read. I got, you know, it's just, that's what I have to do to maintain my spiritual condition. And it's a small price to pay, I think, for what I have to do, because I'll have people tell me, oh, I don't have time to do that in the morning. It's like, okay, well, then you're going to get what you get. Or that's my experience anyway, is I get what I get. When I skip that, things don't go well throughout the day. And so, and it tells me that this is how I'm supposed to use my will, you know, because we, you know, everybody's talking about, what are they talking about in step three, my will and my life. Well, right now I get to use my willpower all I want, as long as I'm lined up with this power that's in my life. He wants Debbie to be Debbie. You know, I don't need to be anybody else, because this is the only thing I know how to do, is how to be me. And that's how I'm learning how to do this and how to be loving and tolerant, because it's just not... I mean, I grew up in a loving and tolerant home, but it's for some reason my little twisted thinking does not seem to be that's how I want to live my life. But today it is. Today it is. And it took doing these steps over and over again to realize that the benefit of doing this is much better than the cost of not doing it. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. Call those people that wake up and nice in the morning, call them bing people. They just bing, I'm ready for the world today. I'm more like, it's another day. Grr. And then I have to do what Debbie does. Take about an hour to kind of get centered and focused, and coffee and a shower and some prayer in there. I like language. And idioms, rest on our laurels. And the other thing is, I'm glad people write stuff down, because then I can reference it and look at it again. I don't have to keep it all in my head. But the idea with rest on our laurels is become so satisfied with one's past actions, you don't want to put any more effort in. And in a lot of ways, that perfectly describes me as an alcoholic. It's like, all right, I'm done. I've got this. I don't need to do anything else. I'm just going to stay right here. And my experience with life and with alcoholism and with spiritual condition is that life is not a level plane. It's either I'm moving up or I'm sliding back. I don't ever get to sit still. If I stay in neutral, then there's nothing propelling me forward, and I'm just going to slowly slide back. And eventually, I believe I'd slide back into active alcoholism, and I don't don't want to do that. And in a reference that, you know, I like the way the book's written, it lays these ideas out and then it brings them up again, and then it references them in different ways as we go along and read it. You know, in Bill's story, he says, an alcoholic who fails to enlarge and perfect his spiritual life, to me, is the same idea of, you know, letting up on your spiritual program of action. And I do have some experience with just kind of coasting or being in neutral and having gotten into trouble. Not necessarily going back to drinking, but being far enough off the spiritual beam that it takes me some concerted effort, kind of like what Debbie's talking about in her experience with that, like almost losing a job or almost completely destroying a relationship with a family member, and then having to reel back from it and go, well, what's my solution? What's my answer? I'm going to have to use that, because my shortest prayer is, help me. But I also like that, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? And you know, I've had those intense times where, like, I've had to literally get into the steps with a sponsor over a week or a weekend and tackle, like, one specific thing that was going on. And you know, and it all, to me, my experience was that it came back to what my behavior was and my thinking and my fears and my resentments in that situation specifically. Kind of change gears real quick. One of the I do a lot of AA conferences, and a lot of times they'll have themes, and I got the opportunity to be of service to a huge one called IKIPA, and I was part of the host committee 10 years ago in Atlanta, and the theme was carry the vision, and so this, it just has a little soft spot in my heart for that. And it, when I wear the shirt or the sweatshirt or go through any of my scrapbook stuff and I see that, it always reminds me of this. And then the last thing I was kind of thinking about with this, you know, and praying and meditating on what, you know, what would come to mind was, you can exercise our willpower along these lines, all we wish. It's the proper use of the will. And that's been what's coming up for me a lot lately is, like, for me, I really believe God has me here to help people. He's given me a place to come and be available to help people, which is AA. And it's not the only place I find myself able to help people. But I used to do exactly what it talks about in the beginning of this paragraph, like, oh, okay, I've given my number to one newcomer, I'm good. I've helped somebody today, I don't need to do any more. And my experience today is that I don't get enough of that. I honestly wish my sponsees would call me more. Not only because it helps me, I feel like I get to help them. My biggest fear from the very first inkling of my sobriety was, like, what am I going to do for friends, you know? And I get to not only help people with my own experience, but in that process, you know, I usually become friends with the guys I sponsor or people I help or become friends with people, and then we get to help each other in sobriety. I think, like, we can exercise our willpower along this lines, all we wish. So now I'm thinking, okay, how can I apply that alcoholically? Like, you know, and that just reminds me that I'm still an alcoholic. But it also says, the next line, it is the proper use of the will. I mean, I can tell you, when I pray for thy will to be done, and then I look to help someone else, it has not failed me yet. Whatever is going on inside my brain, gets fixed. It doesn't necessarily mean there's more money in the bank account to pay the bills or whatever the situation is on the externals might not always change right away. But my fear of it and my lack of faith in God about it changes by doing those things, by exercising what power I do have, and if I can aim that power at trying to help someone else, then I'm reasonably assured, based on my own experience and what this book is telling me, that that's the proper use of my will. So, thank you.
All right, our last reading is also on page 85. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. But we must go further, and that means more action.
One thing I didn't say earlier that was kind of from year one of sobriety brought into part of my action is my sponsor was big into conferences, was big into retreats. Got sober in Baltimore, and there was a yearly retreat there that we would go to, and it was all AA people. And part of that weekend would always be some type of inventory, whatever was going on in my life at that point. And I went for years, every year, and really, really enjoy it. And then a couple of years ago, I went by myself to New Mexico, and I told everybody, I don't have a cell phone, I don't have text, I don't have email, I am going for 3 days. And that's what I did, was I prayed and I meditated, and it was amazing. So it is important for me to make this important, that I take the time to do these things. And I do feel the spirit of whatever you want to call it. Anyway, we won't get into all that, whatever you want to call it. I feel the spirit flow into me. And that's part of my prayer, is that I can be His love and light and grace, just that channel of it comes in and it goes out, and it comes in and it goes out. And the only way I know to do that, you know, I'm a spiritual thief. I would hear people talk about this stuff, and it's like, I want what you have, and I want you to give it to me. I don't want to have to pray in the morning. I don't want to have to meditate. I don't want to have to say I'm sorry. I don't want to have to take inventory, but I want what you have. And so today, I know the only way I get it is doing the work and having my own experience, and it's also the only way I believe it is if I have my own experience. So anyway, I've talked enough. Thank you.
Thanks, Debbie. So I do this little prayer often before I get in my car. I stand by the car door. I look up at the sky. I just kind of go, "All right, God, whatever you need me to do today." And it's exactly that. Like, I just want to feel the flow of God come into me. And I'll share that with people. Oftentimes, you know, in those conversations we have in parking lots after meetings, or outside restaurants, or wherever, at a concert, I've done it. You know, it's nothing like standing in the middle of a Slayer concert at the Norva going, "All right, God, what do you want me to do here?" You know, Sponsee got a cut over the eye. Let's go get him some help, you know. But the other thing that I'll, like, to me, it's very, like, intimate. Like, it is a very profound thing to stand in front of your Creator and say, "I'm here to do whatever it is you want me to do." And I often will, like, come up with this, like, I'm going to be, like, I got to go do something that's, like, Oprah Winfrey show worthy, profound, alcoholic, extremist kind of thing. And when that thought passes and I reel it back in, it's like, you know what? You've got a pretty nice job today with some nice people that you enjoy working with. Why don't you just go show up and be on time and do a good job there? And, oh, you get to work by yourself today in the warehouse? You don't have to interact with anybody? yes, you know? And then someone shows up to work and you're just like, it's all ruined. No, she's cool. I like her. So we get to chat, but she works in the office and I'm in the warehouse. So a little bit of interaction, but, you know. So that's like right today, just, you know. And then that last line, it's always in there, you know. But we must go further, and that means more action. I joke with, Debbie mentioned something about, you know, people not in AA, and when they know you're in AA and you mentioned going to meetings, I get that a lot. Like, you still go? Like, why? Is everything okay? I get that question so much. Is everything all right? Like, it's been so long for you. And I'm like, everything's great. Like, I go now because I want to go. And because I'm is a direct, to me, a direct connection to my involvement here is what allows me to have relationships with that person saying that and everyone else and have a job. But what I'll joke with them about is, like, alcoholics suffer from two basic problems, more and now. And then when I read stuff in the big book in AA literature that says, you know, we must go further, that means more action, I have an opposite reaction to that. I'm like, more action? Oh, there's more to do? So when something's easy, I want more and now of it. But when it takes effort and work, that's where I really struggle. But I do know in my own experience that, you know, the next two steps are where a lot of other promises and miracles happen. So why, at this point, why would I stop on 10 and not go further and take more action? So yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, we're gonna pass the seventh tradition basket. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it did previously. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements? Ralph.
My name is Ralph. I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Ralph.
Hi, Ralph.
The Noonday Group in Virginia Beach will be open Thanksgiving Day from 6, well, the first meeting will be at 6 a.m. It'll be open from 5:30 a.m. to about 11 p.m. at night. There will be a meeting every hour and a half. Really busy if you wish, but there will be plenty of food there. So just come and join us.
Thanks, Ralph. Any other announcements? This group has its quarterly supper and a speaker on Monday, December the 9th. 6 o'clock is the potluck supper. Bring a dish if you wish. 7 o'clock is the speaker meeting. Our speaker is Charlie C. from Arlington, Virginia. That's Monday, December 3rd, right here in this room. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry, yes. Oh, did I say different times? It's the 9th. I'm sorry. Thank you. Oh my gosh. I did? Or what did I do? Okay.
You got it.
All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
In the back.
Yes, thanks.
Hi,
Tara. Hi, Tara. Welcome.
Welcome. Okay, literature is available on the table to my right. If you can, it's free. The books you have to pay for, but if you need a book, we'll just work it out. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, could you all please join me in thanking Jake and Debbie again? After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol Mexican Restaurant on 22nd and Colonial. And will someone volunteer to read the last paragraphs on page 164? Jessica.
Hey, Jessica.
Thank you. We have a nice way of closing. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.